Yeah, well, thank you for having me here. I talked once when it was at the Lincoln restaurant, and that was a lot of fun. I was sorry to hear that that restaurant closed, but this looks like a great setup, too. So, yeah, thanks for having me here. So, I mean, there's so much that you can say about Rahm Emanuel, Mayor 1%. I guess I'll start talking about where things stand right now at this moment compared to how they were looking 4 years ago at the same time leading up to the 2011 election where he was first elected. So I think one of the really striking differences between now and then is what Rahm's campaign messages are. So if you remember at this time in 2011, it was already looking pretty clear that he was going to win. There, it had started out with this field with, you know, initially maybe 8 or 10 names in the ring, and then people were falling by the wayside, and there were a handful of valid candidates by this time. But, you know, it looked pretty clear that Rahm was going to win, and there was also that feeling that even then, a lot of people, regardless of their politics, didn't feel very excited about him, or, you know, already felt kind of skeptical of him, but felt there was this inevitability that he would end up becoming mayor. And I'll talk more about how that compares to kind of the way I see the public mood right now. But anyway, so his message then was a lot about making the hard choices, about belt tightening, about getting Chicago's budget crisis under control, some pretty about the longer school day, language that was not very veiled at all about taking on unions and reining in, you know, the bloated public sector. And it was pretty obvious what he had in mind. And even during the campaign, some of the unions were calling him out on that and realizing that. So nonetheless, he did get elected pretty easily, avoided a runoff, and then right off the bat in his address when he, whatever they call it, the inaugural address when he had just gotten the office. Again, it was all about the hard choices, quote unquote, the belt tightening, the getting the finances under control. And, you know, I think when Rahm was elected the first time, even though, you know, there was, I think, a lot of apathy and skepticism of him even before he won, I think there were also, I mean, I talked to a lot of people personally who also had some hope for him and thought, you know, saw him as a good liberal or even a progressive on certain issues and, you know, the guy that gets things done. And I think a lot of people were actually hopeful of him doing some good things as mayor. And then that, well, so he takes office in May of 2011 and right off the bat really picked fights with unions and, you know, did a lot of that belt tightening and slashing he'd talked about right away with services and with public workforces. Right away, the fight with the teachers union started even before he took office, but he started moving immediately to implement that longer school day and just skirting the contract that the teachers union had and his appointed school board. I know you mentioned the push for an elected school board. His appointed school board went ahead and froze the raises that the teachers had in their contract. So that was, you know, that was shaping up as a battle pretty early on. So the thing that, you know, I think a lot of people didn't know about Rahm or just didn't realize or didn't give enough credence during the 2011 campaign was really what his political character is. And, you know, people that did kind of study, you don't even need to really study it, but take note of his record in Washington and his past, you could see that he really was the epitome of a new Democrat, you know, a neoliberal centrist Democrat. He was one of the key members of the DLC, the whole idea of bringing the Democratic Party to have more of a focus on the private sector and the supposed, you know, kind of trickle-down effect as opposed to a really, really healthy social safety net. So that stuff was actually, and that's part of what I catalog in the book. There was plenty to show that that's the kind of political animal he was even before he was elected. But I think people didn't fully realize that and also didn't realize how important that would be when he became mayor. You know, things that he did in the White House, he took a lot of credit for passing NAFTA when he was in the Clinton White House. Something like that is very similar in political philosophy to what he's done as mayor of Chicago, but, you know, it doesn't immediately translate. So, I mean, probably a lot of people here were thinking and talking about those issues, but, you know, the general voter public in Chicago probably didn't see that as a problem. So he takes office, you know, immediately starts dismantling a lot of social services and cutting public jobs. And I think, is that okay? And then also realizing actually fairly quickly that he couldn't have quite as much of a steamroller approach as he had wanted. He ended up making up with some of the unions that he'd alienated right off the bat and, you know, cutting some deals, but not with the teachers union. It was all out war with the teachers union. And then, I mean, we can go back and talk more about, you know, so much has happened in these past 4 years. We can go back and talk more about it, but I'll try to move forward for now. To my original opening point, which is how that message he had during the first campaign compares to his message now. And, you know, now you see he's not talking about belt tightening. He's not talking about hard choices. It's all about trying to repair the damage that he's done to his public image. It's all about what he's done for the people, you know, what he's supposedly done for the South and West Sides and, you know, for the 99% who he knows very well are pretty pretty disenchanted with him right now, to say the least. People probably saw the first TV ad that he put out there was taking credit for closing the coal plants, and that was a pretty direct, you know, everyone knows his main challenger now is Chuy Garcia from Little Village with roots in Little Village and Pilsen, and then also Bob Fioretti. So this ad taking credit for closing the coal plants, which were, they're closed now, the buildings still stand in the Pilsen and Little Village neighborhoods, you know, was a very direct, transparent way to try to say he did this great thing for low-income immigrant families in Little Village, and also to directly try to talk to the strong base for Chuy Garcia. And the coal plants, that's, you know, far from the truth. He came in at the last minute when there'd been a strong movement. I think people here were probably involved with it, a movement for more than a decade to close or clean up these coal plants. And the supposed deal that Rahm actually cut to close them, they ended up closing even earlier than the deal mandated. They were bound to close for financial reasons anyway, mostly because of fracking and cheap natural gas competing with them and making them not economical. And the deal that he actually cut in a way made things worse, because part of that deal involved the dropping of lawsuits against other coal plants run by that same company, Midwest Generation. So this, you know, really pretty phony accomplishment that he stole credit for and, you know, actually played a negative role in, is what he chose to make his first ad that was supposed to appeal to the, you know, part of the 99% that he'd so much alienated. And then other ads talking about the kindergarten, and you see the billboard on the Stevenson Expressway with him and the plugging his support from the pipe union trades, which is one. I mean, he, you know, we are doing this big overhaul of the sewer and water system. So his administration has created a bunch of union jobs in that respect. So that was a, you know, sort of an easy card he could play to try to win back some of the union support. And then just, you know, just in the past couple days, making this vague promise for reparations for the victims of John Burge's torture. And this is pretty convenient. You know, the election's only, what, 5 weeks away. So he can say that, and there's no way there's going to be concrete action before the election. So, you know, he'd previously issued an apology to John Burge victims, and now he's kind of offering money but not making any concrete promises and, you know, probably running the clock out. That's something I think he's done a lot in general and really not been called on enough. He mentioned when all the kids were coming from Central America, he made this announcement about being a welcoming city and building some sort of refuge for kids coming from Central America. And, you know, the flow of kids, I think, has slowed, but I've never read about any concrete action on that front. You know, I think there's a lot of these kind of empty promises that sound appealing to immigrants and to even progressive or liberal people. And those have accelerated during the campaign. You know, there's a ribbon cutting at a park, it seems like, every day. Going back, you know, the minimum wage, passing the $13 minimum wage, which is not near as, you know, not near what the actual workers' rights groups had pushed for, the $15, and the $13 doesn't take effect until 2019. But, you know, on the national landscape, the increased minimum wage is something he can point to as doing something for working people. He supported the passage of the SRO, the ordinance to protect some affordable SRO housing last fall. So this kind of drumbeat of things that are pretty obviously calculated to bolster his image leading up to the election. And again, really different message from the one that he had 4 years ago. So big question is it going to work, and what's going to happen on February 24th? And I'd love to hear people's thoughts on that. Personally, well, if, you know, for one thing, just in terms of the kind of drama, if Chuy Garcia were to somehow win, I think this would be a Hollywood movie in the making, because the whole, you know, the growing, brewing discontent of people and the show of solidarity for unions and for the whole concept of workers' rights during the teachers' strike. You know, there's been this building momentum happening at the same time as the Occupy movement and this growing class consciousness in Chicago. And then that leads up to Karen Lewis. You know, it appeared Karen Lewis being in the race with Rahm and actually pulling ahead of Rahm during the summer or early fall. So, you know, that looked like it was going to be an epic showdown over really two totally separate political worldviews, opposing political views. And then, of course, Karen, you know, total shock to everyone, having to withdraw for health reasons. And then Chuy Garcia, who, you know, he says hadn't even considered running until that happened, jumping in the race with Karen's support and, you know, then with the teachers' union support and with a lot of labor support and with a deep base in labor and progressive and immigrants' rights circles and history with Harold Washington. So, and then, you know, Bob Fioretti has been making some good points all along, or for a while at least, in city council, been one of the only people to speak out against Rahm. So, you know, if there were to be a runoff, and then if one of the opponents, it would be more likely Chuy Garcia, were to actually win, it would be the kind of story that Bill de Blasio was in New York, or maybe even more dramatic in some ways. And I know a lot of people have gotten, you know, were getting really excited about Karen and then have gotten really excited about Chuy as well. We'll see what happens when the election comes around. It does look like from the poll numbers and just from what you hear on the streets that people are already assuming that Rahm's going to be reelected. And, you know, of course, you always mention the money. He spent a lot of it now, but his total war chest, I think, was $11.2 million. And Chuy had something like, I think, $900,000 or so. And Fioretti maybe $400,000, something like that, before, you know, not counting what they've spent. So obviously everyone else is way outmatched in dollars, and, you know, Rahm could probably bring in pretty much unlimited amounts of additional money as the election gets closer if he feels that he needs it. I personally, you know, I'm really wish I understood better how that money can be leveraged I know how it can be leveraged, but, you know, it is curious that someone who has been so unpopular and has alienated so many people from all different sectors can still just apparently win an election with money. You know, it's not a matter of advertising. I'm sure his ads help, but, you know, most people hopefully do know who he is and have an opinion about him already that, you know, hopefully a few ads wouldn't change. And then obviously there's the whole issue of getting the vote out on election day. So I think it is, you know, it is a pretty telling moment in Chicago's history, or, you know, about the whole nature of, you know, how people in Chicago, how people feel empowered or not to determine their leadership and, you know, their voice that they have in the city of Chicago. I'm jumping around a little bit from what I was planning to talk about, but let me think. I guess I'll just jump ahead. I want to come back to a few things, but I'll just jump ahead to what happens a few more things that I think are worth mentioning on the just sort of image front and, you know, what Rahm means for Chicago. People probably saw the Chicagoland series that aired, I guess it was almost a year ago now. Yeah?
Would you slow down?
Oh, sure.
Distinctly.
Okay. Okay, I'll do that. Yeah, okay, I'll talk a little slower.
You put five sentences and it ordinarily would go in one sentence.
Okay. I think I'd probably do that in my writing, too. I've had editors tell me that, so. So let me think. Yeah, one thing that's worth talking a little bit more about is Rahm's relationship with the African American community, which I know isn't a monolithic community, but that was, you know, throughout Chicago's history, has been a really important part of the city and been a third of the population, and you know, obviously, amazing civil rights legacy here, and really important African American leaders. And one thing that Mayor Daley, I mean, one difference when people are asked about the differences between Mayor Daley and Rahm Emanuel, one thing that people always point out is Daley really, whether you liked him or not, he really knew how to work the communities, and he had his proxies in different neighborhoods and different communities and different constituencies, and he had strong relationships with different African-American ministers and community leaders, and, you know, and same for other different immigrant communities. And Mayor Daley ended up being kind of a leader for gay rights in some ways. So, you know, he really, people will say that Mayor Daley, whether you liked him or not, was a neighborhood guy and knew the neighborhoods of Chicago and would be out there walking the streets. And even someone, I forget who it was, a reporter I know, said he had been with Mayor Daley visiting the families of some murder victims, and that they felt that Daley really, you know, hurt for those families and really cared. So I'm not saying this to begin a whole, you know, praise session for Mayor Daley, but I think all along people could tell that, you know, even during his candidacy, there was this idea the first time around, this idea that Rahm Emanuel wasn't a real Chicagoan, and people have always felt that, and I think it's become only stronger over time, and especially pronounced on the South and West Side, largely black neighborhoods, where he's cut thousands of city jobs, and a disproportionate number of those jobs have been black workers. The teachers' union, led by an African American woman, high proportion of the union members are African-American women. And this is the union that Rahm Emanuel not only picked a fight with, you know, mayors are supposed to fight with unions over the contract, but picked a fight over their whole existence and their whole value as human beings and as workers, almost calling them greedy and selfish and blaming them for hurting the kids in these neighborhoods, which obviously there's so many other reasons that test scores are low in some of these neighborhoods and that families are suffering. Starting, you know, probably about a year and a half ago, I think Rahm Emanuel started to make some really concerted efforts to win back African American voters, you know, people, voters. He did things like naming, you know, this kind of backfire, naming the street for Bishop Brazier, which turned out was something that people didn't actually want. Getting the Whole Foods in Inglewood, probably a good thing, but, you know, seems like sort of a token gesture, making the apology for John Burge. A lot of things that were, to me, seemed like sort of easy things to do that were meant to bolster his image and, you know, at the same time continuing to cut services, close schools, close the almost 50 schools in majority black neighborhoods, things that were actually really hurting people, and that no little, you know, largely token gestures could actually even come close to ameliorating. So that's, you know, that's one thing where it will be really interesting in the election, too. Now there's really, there's a few African-American candidates, but, you know, no one who's really looking strong in polls. Obviously, with Karen Lewis in the race, it would have been a whole different story. Chuy Garcia does have actually a long history working with on civil rights movements and with Mayor Hal Washington, and you know, specifically in his past, having a really strong base with Black voters. So, you know, I'm curious how that ends up playing out in the election, and if he's able to remind people of that, or to, you know, kind of recreate that feeling after having some time as Cook County Commissioner and posts where, you know, he's not necessarily been as visible to your average person. So I think if Rahm does win on February 24th or in the runoff in April, then it will be really interesting to see what actually happens and how he behaves from there on out, because he definitely has realized as mayor that it's not going to be as easy as he thought it would to just waltz in and do what he wanted with the city and privatize all the things he wanted to privatize and slash all the things he wanted to slash. The thing I forgot to even mention so far was closing the mental health clinics, that the 6 of the city's 12 mental health clinics were closed in 2012, and that's continued to be a huge issue, really a big campaign issue. It's been one of the main issues that Bob Fioretti keeps talking about. So that's just one example. He thought that would be the stroke of a pen. I'm sure he thought that he could do that and never give it a second thought, and that's continued to plague him for more than three years. So anyway, he's definitely learned he has to change what he would like to do a little bit, and to at least make more of a show of taking input, and I wouldn't even call it community participation. It's far from that, but at least to be a little bit less autocratic. We have seen that. Once he's reelected, will that continue, or will he feel that now, after winning, even when his popularity was so low, he has just a total mandate to do whatever he wants, especially if you think he, you know, may not want a third term. It's probably highly likely that he wants to just finish what he started in Chicago and move on to something else. So if that's how he's thinking, then there's even less motivation for him to care at all about what anyone thinks of what he does. I think one good example on this front is the whole situation with the Obama Library. Even at a moment when Rahm is trying hard to make it look like he's doing things for regular people and specifically for the South Side and for African Americans, even at this moment, he's determined to push through this Obama Library with the University of Chicago proposal, and which has become really, or has been all along, really controversial and opposed by a lot of people in those neighborhoods. It was for a few reasons, one being that some people thought it should be in Pullman, or where Obama had actually, closer to where Obama had done his community organizing, or in other locations other than Hyde Park. And now there's the situation where if it is to be in Hyde Park for the University of Chicago, they'll need to take public parkland in parks that are really Jackson or Washington parks that are really beloved by people. And people also see it as furthering the ongoing expansion and land grab and gentrification that the University of Chicago is causing in the surrounding neighborhoods. So Rahm is determined to push that library through and to take the parkland if it needs to be taken in order to get the library there. So I think that's telling of, you know, even when he is trying to mollify these communities, when it comes down to the larger national stage and his political legacy, he'll really do anything. You know, getting the library in Chicago, that's one of the things that will be, a notch on his belt when everything else, when the mental health clinics are, you know, are long forgotten by, at least by his friends in high places. So I think that's, you know, what we'll see more of if he's reelected, is just his way at all costs. And, you know, then there's the other, just one last angle I want to explore before we talk and have questions and rebuttals, is the movement for a more independent city council. A few groups that people probably know, Take Back Chicago and the Reclaim Chicago movement, and a lot of activists and groups have sort of, I mean, I don't mean this to be disparaging, but have kind of just given up or, you know, set aside the mayor's race and focused on city council races and the whole goal of getting more independent aldermen in city council, more progressive aldermen specifically. So I think that's a really interesting movement and a really interesting strategy. And there's a handful of wards that are really interesting races where some candidates who I think are exciting and are, you know, genuine grassroots leaders, including a couple teachers union members, actually have a chance of winning. So that's a big deal in Chicago. But I think the dark or the, you know, flip side of that is even if you have a better city council, a more independent city council, you know, cynically, how much of a difference is that going to make? Because we have a lot of ordinances that have majority support, that have 26 to 35 out of 50 aldermen supporting them, but they still don't pass because they get buried in the rules committee or in some other committee where Rahm's allies won't call them for a vote, so they can't move to the full city council. And then, of course, the mayor can still veto an ordinance if he wants to. And then Rahm, you know, even when you do get more progressive people in city council who are trying to do the right thing, the mayor just has a lot of power. And he has, right now, he has this PAC that has $3 million or more that can be used to try to unseat any aldermen who haven't towed the line. So I think those movements to get more independent aldermen are really exciting, but I think they're also an uphill battle. And, you know, that's where I guess in Rahm's second term, if he does have one, a lot of it will come down really to people just fighting for their rights on individual issues, things like the teachers going on strike when Rahm had actually helped work to pass a law that everyone thought would make it impossible for them to strike, and they did, and they basically won the strike, you know, something like that. Things like the mental health movement, they haven't gotten the clinics reopened, and, you know, they probably won't, but, I mean, they've made really great strides in probably protecting the clinics that remain and keeping it an issue on the front burner. You know, the Fight for 15 campaign is what got the $13 minimum wage, wouldn't have happened without that. So things like that. I think everyone who's opposing Rahm and who's working on these aldermanic races also sees their efforts as part of a larger movement that will extend beyond this election and will hopefully bear fruit in other ways down the line. And so, you know, that's if you want to talk about the rise of the 99%, I mean, you could argue how much the 99% has actually risen, how much they will continue to rise, but I think that's the, you know, that's the thing to, I guess, to look out for. So yeah, I'll leave it at that, but yeah, do questions or how's it go? Thank you. Sorry for talking so fast.